Good evening, everyone. I'm Darren McBreen. The InfoWars Nightly News will not be seen this evening as much of our crew are out observing the Memorial Day weekend, the Memorial Day holiday. I hope much of you are out there doing the same, spending some quality time with your friends and family. We do, however, have a special interview lined up for you this evening. And this is an interview by our news director, Rob Dew, with Shooter Jennings. He's a country music star, and he is the son of country music legend Waylon Jennings, probably my all-time favorite country music star. So that's coming up next. On behalf of InfoWars, I want to wish you all the very best Memorial Day weekend, and we'll see you back right here tomorrow night at a regular scheduled time. Here's Shooter Jennings with Rob Dew.
Just watching was the intro to Police State 4, The Rise of FEMA. On a lark, I sent him an email saying, hey, can we use this song in the intro? It really fits with the footage. I think it's going to be, you know, really make the film a lot better, because we were kind of doing it on a shoestring budget and it was small. And, you know, I sent you an email and we're here with Shooter Jennings. And hey, Shooter,
yeah, I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, yeah. Man. So, I mean, that summer rage, you know, now we're 3 years later. Mm-hmm. Into this mess that we've kind of got ourselves into since 9/11, and you know, how have you seen the country change? And
I mean, I you know, I'm not saying this because I think that I was right, but I think that I was right. I think that it's getting worse. You know, it's getting more and more in the open what's really going on.
Yeah.
As opposed to back then, it was like a lot of conspiracy theorists like to talk about what's going to happen, but it's like all happening now, you know what I mean? And
exactly.
We're watching it happen. And I think, like, when you called me about Police State, like, that was a dream for that record for me. Like, there was no better audience for a song to be used in than someone who would purchase that.
That's one of the main questions when you look at the comments on that. I think it's got almost 3 million views or 2.5 million, something like that, on YouTube, just on one channel. And everybody wants to know, what is the opening song? What is this song? You know, so the song really had an effect on people, and especially tying it with that footage.
Yeah, man. It was like, you know, when I was writing that song, like, a lot of Black Ribbons, the music was constructed first, which I usually don't do, but I had, like, kind of, I wanted a certain sound that I was going after for the song. So I was writing the lyrics to that song, and of course it deals with the mass graves, which I was referring to the FEMA camps and stuff in Chicago and in, you know, the United States, where they were building these coffins, stacking these coffins.
Georgia is one spot where
Georgia
they did some investigating on.
Yeah, and it's pretty wild, you know. And I think that, like, when I was writing the lyrics to it, I really wanted to make it like a lullaby in a way, because, like, the thing is most people are really not safe out there, you know, and the love of the family and everything like that is the only thing they can trust. That's true. And so you using that in that film was a great accomplishment, in my opinion, as far as the album goes, you know.
Right. Well, and you shot a video to it, too.
We did.
Yours was a lot different. It had more of a kind of a kid being mind controlled aspect.
Yeah, it's like being babysat by television, you know, because that's, I mean, little kids right now are watching the television, and they're getting they're getting the culture of what the people who program the televisions want children to view, what morals they want to instate, and what kind of a view they want children to grow up seeing. Just like schools, you know, mm-hmm. Pink Floyd nailed it way back then. Schools, the way they beat you into submission, and then when they put you out in the world after school, it's like you're this fully formed individual who you know, thinks that money is what success means, and you
you're
know,
fully formed for an office job.
Yeah,
for a 9
you're
to
fully
five,
formed for their agenda.
For
you
a
know
debt
what I mean?
To be a debt slave, and you said it too. They call it programming. Why do you think they call it programming?
Exactly,
it's not called programming on accident.
Yeah.
And they purposely just put that in your face to let you know.
You know, we're just out there right now. I mean, it's like touring is tough if you don't have like a major label behind you supporting your record and stuff. But we're out there, you know, slugging it out, trying to bring the music to the people, I guess. And, you know, the gunslinger tours, we call it. Alex said when I was in the show that, you know, it's
very
probably
apropos.
Not a political.
Yeah.
You know, everything. We actually are selling this thing at the shows that it's a gunslinger box. It comes in an ammo box, and it's got like a poster. There's a comic book we made that goes along with the film. There's a comic book, posters, signed CD, like all this stuff, but it looks like it's an ammo box, you know.
Nice.
But it's like, whatever, man, take the guns away, go ahead, try. It's like, the people that really care about them are not going to give them up, you know?
No, they're not going to give them up. And
I'd like it if Snoop Dogg gives his gun up. Let Snoop Dogg give his gun up, and I'll keep mine.
Yeah, exactly. Well, tell us about the album. You got a great cover here. It's you, and then on the back,
it's in a morgue, man.
You've got this, yeah. So this is I guess prep. Not, they haven't prepped you yet for the funeral, and this is now they prep.
Yeah, so they in the film I had to be in a body bag, which was really tough to breathe in, and then they unzip me, and then this guy Munley, who's in a band,
creepy looking guy pushing you.
He's
around
in an awesome band, dude. He's an amazing musician. His name is Munley J. Munley, and he's in a group called Slim Cessna's Auto Club, and he also has Munley in the Lupercalians and the Denver Broncos UK. He has several bands, but he was gracious. I'm a big fan of his. He was gracious enough to come down and play the Mortician in it. He just has a look, man.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in there, and he's doing all that. And when you see the full movie, like, they flipped me on my back, and they put a tattoo on my back, which it was real. I've got it. It's a big shield that says these lyrics from a Harry Nilsson song. But, like, they did literally transform me into a different human being in this morgue. And then there's the last piece of the film that kind of ties into that. But, it's, you know, the album's a lot about rebirth and coming to terms with who you are and things like that, so kind of all plays into that.
And it's got an opening piano chord when you hear that, and when you start singing, I guess that's from the Flying Saucer song.
Yeah.
That is Pink Floyd 2.0, man.
Yeah, the Do You Know Who You Are is definitely
exactly.
Very Pink Floyd moment. Just,
it just feels like you're watching the lost scenes from The Wall or something.
That's cool.
Which I think is great. And, you know, nobody makes music like that anymore. Or if they do, they are kind of shuttered off.
Yeah.
Back burner. And, you know, the ideas that you were talking about in Black Ribbons, you know, was that major label or did
it was
you,
not.
You
it was I left a major label, and that was the first record that I released.
Right.
And I went and did that record. The producer Dave Cobb and I worked for about a year and a half on that album, you know, because I had a vision for it, which was going to be the you know, I grew up listening to Art Bell. That's where that's how I got to the Alex Jones. You know, I grew up listening to him as a child, and so. I just love the theater of the mind. I love talk radio. I love all this. I love that concept of the lone fighter in the studio fighting the system, talking about the man, you know, and people listening late night and their radios huddle around the radio. Like, I love that visual image, you know. And so when we were doing Black Ribbons, it was like the whole purpose of it was to kind of create this experience of, at the same time, teach some people some things, have some, you know, play around with it. But for me, I wish it was on a major label. I think it would have gotten more attention, but I do know out of any record I've ever done, that record is the one that constantly, still 2 years later, people are telling me, I just discovered this record now, and I love it. It means a lot to me. It's like slowly always growing, and I guess it's kind of like literature in that way, that I think it will always keep turning people on to and waking people up maybe and all that, you know? But at the same time, like, I'm still determined to make a film out of it. I don't believe in just, you know, now that it's gone, it's done. Like, it is something that I think people, it'll always kind of turn people on, maybe, hopefully, you know. But as far as music goes, like, I believe in being true to a vision, and it's not being about singles and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly,
so I'd way rather create an experience on an album than I would just worry about a couple songs that are good.
Well, a lot of things what you said there, the independent spirit, you know, going out independently, it's like you and your gang are going, you know, going from town to town, entertaining people, spreading the word.
It's like medicine shows or something.
It is, yeah. And, you know, there's something to be said doing it on your own rather than having all the major label success. You know, Alex built everything up, you know, by himself, pretty much. Everything you see here is because one man was determined to get on the mic and talk to people and keep talking and not stop.
And that's how you build something that's like a foundation that, you know, so a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine in Nashville said this to me yesterday. He said, you know, the thing about a label and all that, it may not be, the album may not be selling as quickly as you'd like or may not be hitting as many people, but he goes, but if someone else makes you, they can break you. But if you make yourself, nobody can break you.
Exactly. And you get more of those album sales when you're selling them yourself.
Of course. So, yeah. You know, right.
That always helps.
Well, yeah. You know, if they sold $0 of zero is 0% of zero is zero still.
Well, how's it doing now?
It's doing all right, man. You know, it's out there. The label that I have is an independent label, but they're, the guy who runs the label I've known for 13 years, and he's very behind it. I wish he had been behind Black Ribbons, but he wasn't in the way it worked. But we're going to re-release Black Ribbons next year anyway, just to have it out there with this label. But
on a purple record?
You know, the vinyls for Black Ribbons, it was a double vinyl, and there's none of them in existence. You can find them on eBay, but there's none still being made. But you know, it was a really, the packaging was real cool on the vinyl. Hopefully we'll bring it back out, maybe do a dual color, red, white, and blue one or something.
Well, and it sounds like you could do a double movie with, go from Black Ribbons into the other life with the way the song sounded, and it's great. And earlier, or last week when you were on the Alex Jones show, you were playing, you know, cuts from this going in and out. What's your favorite song on here?
Probably, the Flying Saucer song or the Gunslinger, The Other Life, those are ones that I really like a lot. You know, I'm proud of the whole record, though. I really feel like this one was a real, all the colors of my personality kind of went into this record. So that in that way, like the little Black Ribbons, little this, little country, little that, you know, it's kind of got all that. So that's what I'm trying to do, continue doing that. So, you know, I think hopefully I'll have a studio like this one day that I record in after working hard enough as long as Alex has.
As we saw in Katrina, and as we are watching now in New York and New Jersey, the federal government can't and won't help you in a crisis. FEMA ran out of water and MREs in days. Electricity is still off to over 1 million people. The Red Cross, who is quick to beg for money, is now slow to react. Don't put it off any longer. Get prepared today. The InfoWars Shop is the largest distributor of ProPure water filter systems. And now, get 15% off your ProPure order with the promo code WATER15. While you're on InfoWarsShop.com, check out these other great preparedness items. The Aquapod Kit lets you store up to 65 gallons of water in your bathtub. Pocket Socket provides you with manual electricity for small electronics like your cell phone. The Life Straw is great for your bug out bag. And check out our complete line of Interfood products for great tasting and nutritionally dense foods that have a great shelf life. If you are looking to secure your home in a crisis, you can order Strategic Relocations the film, a great companion to the book Strategic Relocations 3rd Edition and The Secure Home by Joel Skousen. When the time to perform arrives, the time to prepare has already passed. Get prepared now, so if a crisis strikes your home, you and your family will be secure. Go to InfoWarsShop.com and don't forget the promo code WATER15.
Shooter, there's so many crazy events going on in the world. We're having a banking crisis in Cyprus where they just froze the bank accounts and then just started taking people's money out. They said they're
big surprise.
Yeah, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60.
Wow, I never saw that coming.
I mean, what does that tell you? Can we trust in the system anymore?
Well, I don't think we could ever, you know, I don't think that, I think that when they founded the system, they knew that we couldn't trust the system, and that's why they put the right to bear arms to protect you from the system in there, and the right to be able to revolution and rise up and things like that, you know, because I think they knew that when any system is eventually going to become corrupt, and I think that immediately that those things started going into place. You know, whether or not, like, our system is ultimately corrupt and it's going to have to be taken down, I'm not saying that. I'm not, like, being a commie about this deal. That's what everyone automatically goes to. The buzzwords are, like, commie and socialist.
If you ask for a change, you must be a commie.
It's like, you know, like, this machine kills fascists. See, that was like he was ready. You know, Guthrie was ready to take on the government against whatever it had to be. You know, and ultimately, I think that it's all pretty par for the course. You know, I think that that with each move they need a 1-2 punch. Like, what is going to be after Obama? What is the next play? Because they already got that big card played with Obama, and he can't be in office forever. So are they going to follow it up with somebody that's going to pander to the right and think that, oh, we've got, you know, it's not like Barry Goldwater is going to come back or something, you know. It's like they're going to have to come up with something.
Yeah.
Who knows, you know.
What about flying in the TSA? Texas recently just put in a second bill this time to try to just make this illegal of them putting our hands on us, you know, without even due process of law.
See, I travel so much. I never get frisked. I never go through that. So I haven't seen it. Like, I've seen all these stories that are terrible about, like, the kid in the wheelchair and all that stuff.
Or the veteran with one leg.
Or they're stealing the pills out of the things. I've listened to Alex talk about that, and it's true because I know that. I've seen that happen where people will be like, "My, I had some pills in this thing that were not here," you know. But I travel. I probably fly on average a lot of times 2, 3, 4 times a week sometimes, and I'm always cruising right through that thing. I don't care, you know. I don't care that.
Oh, you go through the body scanner.
Yeah, I go through it. It's radiation. They see me naked, whatever. But I don't care. You know what happened? I'll tell you something that happened. I'm probably gonna get in trouble for saying this, but sometimes at shows people give me things and I don't think about it. And I was on a Kid Rock cruise of all places, which I never should have done in the first place. But I'm on this stupid cruise and we're playing 3 shows, and some fan hands me a joint. Okay, so I don't think about it. At the moment, I'm like drinking. It's late night. And I put it in my pocket. Okay, this shows you how effective the TSA is. Okay, rolling through the Austin airport, I have already flown. I've disembarked from the ship. I've flown to Austin. Oh no, we drove to Austin. So I got off the ship, went through a scanner, drove to Austin. I am now flying from Austin to New Orleans. I go through the TSA scanner. I go through the body scanner, right?
Nothing.
Nope. They say, you got something in your pocket. And I reach in my pocket. I'm like, well, what is it? I didn't know there was anything in my pocket. I hadn't thought about it. This has been a week ago that this happened. And I pull up like a joint, a straight up joint, and I drop it. I'm like, I see it. I'm like, oh, like, I didn't know I had that. I drop it. And the guy's like, oh, okay, cool. And I pick it up and he's like, go on through. And I'm like, did that just happen? Like, wow. The dude saw it. Yeah. Like, straight up saw it. You know, and I was like, oh, man. All right. Well, good work. I'm glad we got it. That the war on drugs is not as important as the war on terror.
Do you think this effort now where states are going, you know, we're sick of the federal government telling us what to do. We're going to make our own laws. We're going to push back and say, you know what? We don't want your war on drugs. We're going to tax it and make it legal. I mean, what's your feeling?
I have very mixed feelings about all of it, because I'll tell you why. I think that if you legalize drugs, that it's going to definitely get rid of a lot of crime issues that we have here. It's going to definitely undercut, just like, you know, cartels and things, and it's such a big trade here. So I definitely think that legalizing the drug is better. I think it's really crappy that we have so many people in the prison system for marijuana and things like that. I think they're going to resolve a lot of problems if they do that. But there's a double-edged sword to this, man. People that care about drugs are fighting so hard. I shouldn't say drugs, because it's not like anybody's like really fighting to legalize heroin. But like with pot, that I feel like that the biggest issue with the pot thing is that people don't realize that once they legalize it, then it's going to become, it's like bootlegging was, man. You know, we're going to, like, moonshine's still going to be legal, just like good pot's still probably going to be illegal, because Marlboro, from what I understand, already has factories set up ready to go, and all of a sudden we're going to get real crappy weed that's going to saturate the market real fast.
So it's going to be filled with asbestos and other things.
Yeah, and other things. Yeah, and nicotine and whatever else, you know, and you're going to end up, there's a double-edged sword for sure, you know. But I think if the Republicans were smart, they would have somebody that was going to be for the legalization. Get off the religious topics, get off the moral topics, and really start addressing things like that. I think it's good for certain people. I think it's weird when I go to, I mean, I live in California and it's pretty much legal there. I mean, there's all my friends, all they got to do is say that their back hurts or they can't sleep and they get a card and then they can go in and buy joints and whatever and smoke them in the place. And it's fine. And I don't know anybody who's ever had any kind of, or even a car wreck really from being high and everything. I've had friends that have gotten into a lot more trouble from the prescribed drugs that they get on a daily basis for just going in and their foot hurts and the doctor gives them a prescription of Vicodin and two months later they're addicted to it or
yeah.
or Ambien or something and falling asleep while they're driving their car. You know, that kind of stuff is more dangerous.
I think what you're saying about the moral issues, too, I mean, if they just put those aside, let's talk about the banking system in our country.
Yes, yes.
Let's talk about
drop the gay right. You know, let gay people get married. Like, I think let gay people get married, let people have abortions, deal with all that stuff. Let them deal with those other moral issues themselves. Now, I know that goes against a lot of religious beliefs with the abortion thing, and that's a topic unto itself, but I think that is getting in the way of what the real problem is, and everyone wants to address those things and the pot thing and all that. And if people could actually get into a discussion about the things that matter, and those wouldn't be the sway vote, the sway vote, things. I think that is absolutely why we can't get anywhere with politics. Oh, debate.
Yeah, there's been only one politician to bring up the Federal Reserve, aside from Herman Cain, who said it was a great organization. That was, you know, Ron Paul. He's the only one that ever said, we got to look at the Federal Reserve system. Everybody else thinks it's great. They just assume it works.
But remember when it was founded, I mean,
founded in secret.
They knew that it was the worst thing that ever happened in this country. They knew it was going to be the worst thing.
What do you think about that? The whole see something, say something thing from, you know, Dung Beetle Napolitano.
I like WikiLeaks. I am supportive of people exposing the injustice in the world. So that's, that is the kind of, but they're, like Alex is saying, they're going after whistleblowers. You know what I mean? I'm into the whistleblower when it's in the favor of the American public. You know what I mean? Again, they're finding ways to create disinformation, to discredit, or to actually just crowd the market of whistleblowers so that people will not know which whistleblowers are in their interest and which ones are not. You know what I mean? Just like it's just like even with the Jesse Ventura show, you know, it's like I watch that show and I like it that it's getting through, but it's done in such a manner that it's hard to believe it. It's like when I see the actors and then we got to turn this plane around and go meet so-and-so, it's like all that stuff seems so over the top that it's hard to believe that they're going to let any of that get through. And like Alex said last time I was on, he said it was like a steam valve, you know, it's like the pressure's so big they're releasing some of the steam by letting that
on the television. That's one way, we're going to put out part of the story to let people think we're really covering it.
But they're also going to, there's also going to be things like Zeitgeist, which are completely disinformation tools because it's like, you know, all based in Masonic and
at
stuff
the end
like
of the
that.
Day.
Have you seen that documentary called Aquarius Age of Evil?
No,
it's on YouTube. It's pretty interesting, but a lot of it is spent debunking, actually just drawing, pointing out the correlation between the Zeitgeist and Masons, about how the information in Zeitgeist was taken from Masonic sources and with the Masonic agenda in place.
Well, there you go. So. And, you know, Alex was actually, Peter Joseph used some of Alex's footage on the first Zeitgeist movie.
Yeah, I know.
And then there was a big tiff.
But see, I think it's a use of... That's like him. I think they sprinkled in stuff that people think that they're on the right side because they used things like that. But I think that what they're, especially with the whole Jesus and the sun and like a lot of that stuff was disinformation, I think, to try and usher out the age of Jesus and usher in the age of, and, you know, regardless if you're religious or not, I think that that's what's a lot of what is going on is they're trying to usher in the age of atheism, and therefore people are going to be looking towards humans
as
opposed to spirituality.
Anybody. That's what happens. And it's like, hey, why not kill babies up to age three? There's all these news stories, you know, we were talking about abortion where they're bringing these babies out and they were still alive and they're cutting their heads off with scissors. I mean, just disgusting stuff. How do
Jesus
we do that?
Christ.
How do we get to that as a culture?
I know, that's how to
destroy our own species, for the sake of convenience or whatever. And speaking of symbols, you've got, we were talking about this earlier, the symbol on the album here.
That's Metatron's cube, which is like the fruit of the tree with the tree of life and sacred geometry and numerology and all that stuff. Like I got really into, like I said, I read a book called Gateway to the Gods, which really opened me up to a lot of the Book of Enoch and the sacred geometry associated with that. And that book is more than anything about the exploration that possibly that there were through the Egyptians and things. They actually figure out some way of interdimensional travel, and that's what actually angels were and things like that in the Bible. And that's really what the book is about. But I read lots of things like that and get into the things like that. And, you know, a lot of this album is lyrically about a lot of my life and changes I've been going through in my life and coming to terms with the good and the bad of all that, and kind of becoming a little bit of a different person. And so a lot of that ties into, like, Enoch and his translation into heaven. He was given a new name, which was Metatron, and or however they pronounce that. That's how I assume it's pronounced. But there's a lot of that in there that I studied and kind of wove into the imagery of the film and everything to kind of tie into the themes of the record.
Yeah. So. Well, speaking of imagery and music, it seems like every year in the Super Bowl, there's a new controversy, whether it's Madonna with the goat head and coming out.
It's so stupid. Ever since What's-Her-Name showed her boob on there, it's like every year they got to do something crazy. You know, like somebody's got to flick somebody off or something. You know what was awesome? I'll tell you what's awesome is Prince was awesome. He was classy and he killed it because he's a great musician. And Tom Petty was awesome. He's classy. He killed it. Nobody cared about it. So you get these pop stars up there and they got to do this business, and that's more programming for the masses anyway. Tom Petty is definitely not an artist who's programming for the masses. He's an American legend, a great musician. Same with Prince, man. Yeah. Even if people didn't agree with his imagery, he was pushing the boundaries because he wanted to, free sex, love, all that stuff. It's like Prince was a great musician. It's when you get these fluff acts, you get Janet Jackson, you get Madonna, you get, MIA, who normally stands out as a political activist, but some of these guys in the pop world, they just like to go up there and shock people and get people riled up because it's good for business.
Were you ever approached like that by the music industry people? Like, you have to put this symbol in, put it this way?
No. Never. Well, I was lucky enough to get into my first deal with people who respected what I was doing, and nobody ever tried to change me. I think that I followed advice in moments that I regret doing, but or that I in certain, like by my third record, I had gotten beat down enough by country radio because they'd given me a taste of success in the beginning, that I had to kind of chase this dragon for success. So at the time, I was just mentally like mind screwed a little bit and trying to figure out, find my voice, and that was why I had such an adverse reaction and did Black Ribbons next, because I realized that I had been poisoned a little bit along the way. Like the first record and the second record were very genuine. The third one was also genuine, but I was lost at the time. And so, like, by the time that Black Ribbons happened, I was like, you know what? Wow. Like, I stepped out of it, stepped away from the system. And I was like, you know what? Screw you guys. This is what I really want to say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And did that. And then, so ever since then, I felt like I was a different person a little bit,
I'm going to use synthesizers on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because that's what it's stuff I grew up listening to, I cared about. I don't care. It's like, screw you guys and your ideals and your system and your idea of success and your money. Screw your money. I don't want your stupid money.
And a lot of people can't say that, unfortunately.
Well, a lot of people would like to say that, but they're a slave to the money. That's how they get everybody, is a slave to the money.
Here are some of the amazing deals at InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsShop.com. The Survival Seed Vault by My Patriot Supply features only the finest survival heirloom seeds for a robust and hardy garden, even in the toughest of times. The ARC All-in-One Seed Kit contains 70 varieties of 50,000 seeds of fruits, vegetables, medicinal, and culinary herbs. All ARC seeds are heirloom. Each type is labeled and sealed separately for ease of use and longevity. The Deluxe Emergency Seed Bank combines three of Emergency Seed Bank's top sellers: the Family Survival Emergency Seed Bank, the Medicinal Herb Seeds Pack, and the Culinary Herb Seeds Pack. We also have starter varieties of the deluxe seed packages for fruit, salad, salsa, peppers, and medicinal herbs and more. Go to the InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsShop.com.
Going back to football real quick, Hank Williams Jr., he came out and said some things on a TV show.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, they cut his gig on Monday Night Football. And that was kind of iconic, having Hank Williams Jr. come out every Monday night and sing that theme song.
They slaughtered a piece of American culture with that. But, look, what he said was, it was ridiculous how Fox and Friends, and he knew it, because, I don't always agree with everything Hank says. He was out there, doing his thing for Sarah Palin, McCain, and all that. And like I said, I don't get behind anybody when they come down the pike. I never do. You'll never see me at a rally. So I know that he's, like, tied into that. And I think he realized afterwards, he even said in that interview that he was bummed that he had gotten so behind the rally with Palin and all that. But that he thought that he was in Friends, because he's notoriously Republican, and Fox and Friends kind of threw him under the bus in that interview too, and we're like, well, what did he say, And he didn't say Obama's Hitler. He did not say that. I'm sorry he didn't. They spun it that way because he said it was like Hitler having the golf game with Netanyahu. It's like, okay, it's like Alex said in the interview to me earlier. He likened somebody to, you know, Hitler being, you know, putting the names of the Jews in the magazine or in the newspaper. It's like, but they like to take that. They like to spin it. They like to make controversy out of it. When they took him off the air, I really loved how he came back and said, because they only took it off for a minute and they were going to have him back. They were trying to punish him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, screw you. I don't need you or your, you know, your show. I'm not coming back.
I think he came out with his Keep the Change song.
He came out with the Keep the Change song, and he came out with the record, which had a very strong message to it, and I really enjoyed that record. Now, I don't know if him going out in the concerts and saying, we got a Muslim president that loves, you know, gays, loves Jews, and we hate him, or whatever. Like, I don't know if all that stuff's necessary. I think that sometimes he gets wound up and kind of will say something, but I think he's enjoying the controversy behind it.
Sure.
But I think that it's bull crap how they like to flex their power. Again, if they made you, they can break you, and they like to try and show you that. And with the Dixie Chicks, unfortunately, they succeeded in that because she spoke her mind about Bush, and whether or not you like that or not, whether or not people agree with it, they took them and they massacred their career. I mean, they really did, and it's still, they've not recovered from that, and I don't know if they ever will. Well, and they should be able to speak their mind.
Sure, and they came out, they talked about a Republican president. He talked about a Democratic president, but they both equally got demonized.
Of
Hank Williams Jr. was a little more established.
Well, they were both, I mean, in that, this, you look at this again, both of the point of views, it's amazing how it happened because they were crap talking a Republican president. They were the liberal side of things, so that the country music world, which has a lot of conservative ties, slaughtered them. And in the case of with the mass media, with the general media, they attempted to slaughter Hank. Now, what happened with Hank is I don't think it hurt Hank because the
his fans don't like Obama either.
The country music fans can get behind what he said, and they aren't tied to the liberal media. And
right.
see, the point of view of the Dixie Chicks was more along the lines of the liberal media. So they're, unfortunately, in that situation, it showed that the country radio had more control over damaging the career of the artist than the liberal media, because the liberal media was unable to damage Hank's. If anything, they were actually able to make him sell more records in his backlash to them, because country radio and the country music audience is generally more a conservative audience. But whereas the Dixie Chicks, they were able to slaughter their careers because the conservative side of things controls the radio. You know what I mean?
What if the Dixie Chicks came out now and said, you know, hey, we don't like Obama's warmongering? What would the liberal media do to them?
I think the liberal media, well, that's tough because Natalie is very liberal, you know, and so just like Tom Morello, who's liberal, who I have a lot of respect for, he'll question Obama, and the liberal media won't prosecute him for it. Persecute him. Mm-hmm. Prosecute him would be the wrong word. Won't persecute him for it because they know that he comes from a balanced place, and ultimately he's not, you know, it's not just like a conservative Yahoo questioning the thing. Now, okay, that being said, if the Dixie Chicks were to come out and speak out against Obama, I think they would win back a bit of the audience from country radio. I don't think that it would be... I'll tell you what, I don't think it would really be talked about. That's what I think would happen. Yeah. I think they'd come say something, and the liberal media would be like, we still like you, Natalie Maines, and country music would be like, oh, isn't that great, she did that. Well, too bad they don't have a new record out right now. You know, I mean, I think it would probably kind of go under the table a little bit because both sides were going to let it slide. That damage has already been done, unfortunately, you know.
Well, we see that with stories that we, you know, put out there that the liberal media won't touch until Drudge Report picks it up, and then we're able to force an issue, especially
with $2 billion
Yeah, because, you know, this 2 billion bullet story that, you know, essentially Paul Joseph Watson, Kurt Nemo, Alex, you know, pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And at first, you know, I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, you know, they're buying it over 5 years, but then you start looking, you're like, wait a minute, 2 billion bullets. That's enough to fight a 10-year war against who? And they're getting this for target practice, but they're buying hollow points. And, you know, the Oceanic Association's getting 100,000. I mean, all these different organizations are getting bullets. And, you know, they want to say it's for target practice.
Yeah.
They're not going to be shooting 2 billion bullets at target practice, especially hollow points.
Ah, man, it's such a mess, because it's like you look at that and you're like, who are they going to shoot? And then they're, of course, like, if people rile up, people are going to say that Alex and people like that are just there to rile up people into a riot or something. It's like, and then that's who they're going to use it on, and it's going to be blamed on the people that riled them. It's corrupt, man. What are they going to do? 2 million bullets ever shoot 2 million rounds?
Bullets.
2 billion
it's
bullets.
Ridiculous.
Sorry.
You ever see those things where they show you the money? Like, here's a million, here's a billion, and here's a trillion. You know, a trillion goes to the moon. It's just, it's so amazing that they could do that, and then they don't answer questions about it. They don't want to talk about it. They'll say, oh, it's for target practice.
Of course they don't, because it's all behind closed doors. It's all of the Wizard of Oz. There's a little old man behind a curtain who's pulling all the strings, and we're watching the big guy with his big, you know, head floating in space telling everybody that the world's either all right or it's going to end, depending on what they want you to do, you know.
Shooter, thanks for sitting down with us. Yeah, I want to give you the final word here. Why don't you look into that camera right there and just address the people out there. This is going to be seen in the aggregate hundreds of millions of times, maybe 2 billion, you know, for luck.
maybe one viewing we'll for every
there.
Bullet would be
there. You go. A couple hundred thousand times. But, you know, go ahead, and what do you want to say to the people out there? You know, this is your, you know, nice air-conditioned environment. Yeah, what do you want to talk about? What is really got you interested in being out there and talking to people?
I think it's just important. You know, most people ask me, they say, well, do you have any advice for young artists coming up? And it's like, don't pay attention to the rigid box that they set up for you as an artist, but this goes as a metaphor in life. I think the reality is you can't pay attention to what they have set up around you. The reality is be real, be truthful, be honest, be true to yourself, even, you know, the most important thing a person can do is become fully realized in their life, I think. And if someone, you know, I've seen a lot of people who have been a slave to the money their whole life, and they realize that at old age that they didn't live the way they wanted to live, or maybe do what they wanted to do. And I think the most important thing is, no matter how hard it is, be true to yourself, and bring what you have to offer to the world and share that with people. And that's love and children and life. And that is just as valuable as, you know, creating a masterpiece of a book that creates a revolution. But I think that supporting the small community, supporting what is real in the arts and things like that, I think, you know, it's very important to me to portray that.
Speaking of reality here, we have, what we say, the king of reality. Alex, come on in. Come say hi.
Oh, man, the king of reality. No. Hey, man. Hey, thanks for coming in and doing all these interviews. And, hey, I can't wait to listen to the new album. Your Black Ribbons is one of my favorites. A great job, bro.
Thank you for the support, man.
And I'm telling you, that is an amazing cover.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me, buddy.
The album here is called The Other Life. It's by Shooter Jennings. You can go out and pick it up and get it on iTunes. You can find it at shooterjennings.com. You can find it on The Other Life. Album.com, right?
Yeah, and there's also a website set up the film called thislifeisadream.com, which is part of it too. But it's all shooterjennings.com. You can get to everything.
Right. And then the film. We didn't even really get to talk about the film. I guess next time you come back in, you'll have it released by then and everything. You have a trailer to that, and you'll soon, release it online?
We're taking different steps as to how we're going to roll it out. It'll probably be several months from even when this airs.
Because
I think
and
we're gonna
support alternative real underground, and it will become the dominant form.
Yes.
So
that is
vote
true.
With your dollars, folks.
That's right. Vote with your dollars.
That's a nice piece of artwork, too, to put on your wall. That's what I do miss about albums.
Yeah, man.
The size of the artwork.
Well, the CD of it actually has a poster that comes with it. We did like lots of things like that because I'm the same way, man.
Yeah.
You know, I used to go to Sam Goody's as a kid and buy posters for bands and put them up, and it just doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, that's the poster you brought.
I still have my Iron Maiden.
Oh, yeah,
posters.
Man.
All right, he's got to go play tonight. Let him out of here.
Yeah, we love
it. All right, well, thanks for the interview. And
thank
we will
man.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Rob Dew for InfoWars Nightly News, and we'll see you next time.